Well, welcome everybody. Welcome to Dev Days Taipei. I'm really excited to be here. Really pleasantly surprised at what a big crowd we have today. All our distinguished guests earlier today, was great to hear from them. So we're actually going to take these two sessions together. I'm David Robinson. I run the development office within the Shanghai. And we're going to be working with Ted Wei is going to do the middle part, and then we're going to break it up into a third part. So we kind of combine these two talks into one big talk. So today I want to talk about building data-driven apps with the Cortana Intelligence Suite. So the focus of the conversation today is to kind of get you a little bit of understanding of what is it, what is in it, as well as how you can use it to help improve your apps by using this new suite that we've created. We're also going to put together some demos. I think you'll be pretty excited about what you're going to be able to see, both what you can do with the suite as well as things you can do in terms of building your applications. Now, one thing I want to make sure, we've talked about the Cortana suite for quite a while. Previously, we talked about it as the Cortana Analytics suite. But one thing we discovered, and as we started adding new capabilities, intelligence is really one of the big things that we want to be able to emphasize within the suite itself. So if you occasionally hear somebody stumble and call it Cortana Analytics Suite, that's just because we've been around for a while. It's now the Cortana Intelligence Suite. So the suite itself is really quite extensive. And because it is such big and it's a rich set of things that are in the suite, there's no possible way that we can talk through all the various details today. So the goal here today is to give you an orientation to the suite, give you a flavor of what's going to exist in it, and how you can possibly use it in developing your apps itself. So I'm actually really excited to what's in the suite these days. If you look at, as you go through this presentation and you hear all the various things in here, many of these things just did not exist a couple years ago. And this is new capabilities and new things that I'm really excited about. Now, the other thing to remember here is that everything you're going to see today exists today. None of this is future talk. This is not visionary thing. These are things that are available today, maybe in preview, maybe in general availability. But these are things that you can go to and download and use it today. So first off, let's look back 20 years. So anybody here an applications developer 20 years ago? Oh, we got a few. This is a pretty young crowd. So does this look familiar to you? This is the old classic two-tier forms over data. Very basic, very simple than what we did back in 1995. But if we go 5 years forward, now we're starting to see the web coming into play. Now we start seeing apps and web pages getting served out of the database. This is now having that extra web server into that flow now makes it much more possible to do things. Now, of course, these various different web pages are pretty basic, nothing like we see today, really simple, not very smooth moving forward to that one. But then as we moved another 5 years forward, now we've got the introduction of Ajax. Ajax and other web services allows us to start building a real three-tier architecture. This is allowing us to be able to insert business logic into the architecture and into our services and to be able to new different form factors and new different ways of using the systems, that one. Now, if we move another 5 years forward, now mobile apps are starting to show up. Now web apps are getting much more mature, much more complicated, complex in terms of how they're able to do it. Now we have multiple services that allow us to serve multiple different client front ends. This new complexity drives us further into the three-tier architecture, forces us to be able to create much better division between the various different tiers and separation of that one. So now we want to make sure that we separate the business logic from the presentation logic from the database logic. So these new complex systems are getting a little bit more robust, a little bit harder to develop, a little bit harder to work with. Now if we just look back as recent as last year, now we're getting to a world where there's a multiplicity of different systems in here. Now we have multiple services pulling information from a lot of different places for the applications themselves. In the back-end services themselves, there's multiple different types that we're able to use. Now we have web services, we have big data services, we have unstructured services. Now we're pulling together some really highly complex systems in terms of how we can provide for our customers and our users really rich, intelligent applications. So to try to explain this a little bit better, I want to talk a little bit about a company that we worked with in China. You can look at this as a company that is a web and mobile applications company and the kinds of things that they're doing within their space. So first off, if you look at what they actually have in their space, they start out with a simple web application. They have a mobile system that they plug into it. Now, as with many mobile and modern applications, they've connected up into social. Because this is China, things like WeChat, Weibo, these are the kinds of things that they're trying to integrate their customers in to get their customers to logging in and to be able to get some analysis of data for what's going on within their, those services. So this starts to give them a much richer view of who their customer is, what are all the various pieces of the customers themselves. So as we go forward, we can see that this is also allowing them to put payment systems. Of course, in China, one of the big payment systems is either Alipay or WeChat Pay, are the two payment systems of these systems going to these systems. So now they've got users, how the users are using the system, and what's this allowing them to do is to create the common notion of a customer or a customer ID for their systems, and to build that into web analytics. Now that their application has been able to pull this information together, they need to store that information somewhere. So what they've done is they've created a customer data hub. That customer data hub is primarily a data warehouse where they bring all that data in together. Then within that data warehouse and that hub, they're able to now take machine learning algorithms and be able to run machine learning against these systems to be able to generate models to get better understanding of who their customer is. These models then further allow them to tag the metadata with various different interesting aspects of things. So now that they're building this complete kind of robust idea of who their customer is, what they're trying to go forward with. But it's not just about the mobile application themselves. There is a whole other category of interactions with their customers that they want to take advantage of. We call these the offline activities. So for example, a customer may actually go into a retail point of sale store, make a purchase. When they're making those purchases, they may have a loyalty card, they may have coupons, they may have different ways of using their phone to scan QR codes to be able to interact with users. It's another form of offline data that they're getting about their customers. Now the customers themselves, when they sell these products and they work with those customers, sometimes things don't work right. And those customers will end up calling up the support line. This is yet another point of contact with the customers where they want to get some understanding about what's happening. Which products are the customers buying? Which products are not working well for them? Which kind of problems they're having? So this all starts generating yet another set of information that we want to be able to feed back into that customer data hub. Now, so being able to take pulling in the online data as well as the offline data itself allows them to create a much bigger or much better, richer picture of who the customer is, what they're going to be interested, how they're going to do things going forward. Now, once they've got this information inside the customer data hub, now we can start doing various different ways to look at how to optimize this data, how to be able to go through the system and figure out what's happening. This starts creating a feedback loop so they can take things such as search engine optimization, other optimizations, and get a better understanding of who the customer is, feed that back into their various digital campaigns and experiences to try to understand what's the best thing to help the customer find the things that they need based on what they've purchased in the past, how they've done, what is their purchasing experience, what's their support experience. All these various things start feeding back into the application. Now that smart, intelligent application can do much better, much richer, different things within the services. But their application and their immediate interaction with the customer isn't the only thing that's important to understand how to give your user a better experience. Sometimes they're what we're calling contextual data. Simple examples of contextual data is weather. What's the temperature out? Is it warm? Is it cold? Is there a national holiday? Is there something going on that may be able to do things like that one? So there's various different things about how the system is running. So for example, if the weather's really cold and rainy, maybe they need to increase and to do some more online work in terms of what's happening. How's the customer going to interact with that online? Ah, it's a nice sunny day today. It actually is nice today. These are times customers want to be outside. They want to maybe actually visit the actual brick and mortar shops to do things. So that might be days that you may want to do various incentives and to try to find the right things for a customer to do it. But say it's a national holiday. Well, they're going to be in neither place. So then you need to be able to do different incentives to understand what the customer is doing. So the contextual data, again, then feeds back into who the customer is, how's the customer going to interact with your application, how you're going to do things. Now, the next other aspect, which is one of the more exciting newer ones, are the cognitive aspects of the system. So when you interact with the customers and you interact with their applications, they do it through now multiple different interfaces, whether it's text or speech. How are the customers actually interacting with the application? Then we can use these new cognitive APIs that we've developed so then we can understand how is the customer reacting to the products. So they go to your website and you're going through in a sales, a woman is going through trying to understand what to buy, and they put up a pair of red shoes. And then she kind of has a frown on her face and doesn't do a very good experience in terms of how things are being done. Once the camera is able to see that one, then you can then, based on just the emotions and how the person's reacting, now they can put up the blue shoes and see the woman's like, oh, this is really happy. And then you can understand that the colors that her favors, just how she's looking, she prefers blue over red. And then you can customize and tailor those experiences for the customer. So this is super, you know, important ways to doing it. Now, once we've pulled all this together inside that customer data hub, we're able to do the feedback, the applications. As a person who's providing these services to your users, you also want to understand what are the analytics. You want to extract some data out of that one to understand what's happening. You want to be able to slice that data. You want to explore that data. You want to be able to see what are the kinds of things that I can do to better optimize and to better manage that system. So it's a pretty rich, complex system that we're trying to pull together here. So in order to talk about this a little bit deeper, I want to highlight a few things which are what I would call the characteristics of an intelligent app. So there's two ways to look at this. One is, what does that end customer see? How is the customer visualizing, seeing, using, interacting with your application? How are things going? Then you as a developer, what are the services, what are the APIs, what are the capabilities that you need to provide to be able to make that intelligent app going forward? The first way to look at this one is customers want the applications. The users want to see that application in a personalized way, something that they're very familiar with. So these are the kinds of things. What can you do as a developer to give them that kind of experience so that you kind of know how things are working well? It's friendly, it's customized, it's familiar. So as an application developer, things that you were talking about before, facial recognition, emotion detection, be able to understand, and the person's looking at the phone or looking at the web page, to be able to connect with them and to understand what's their sentiment, how are they feeling about things. The next one is making sure you have the right kinds of interaction, text or speech interaction. So some customers will want to type things on a phone. Some people will want to just speak. For example, I love now how WeChat allows you to just do verbal discussions, and you get to choose whether you want to type or speak. If you're walking down the street, a speech interface is much better in terms of getting things done. And this whole thing allows you to try to build that full, rich understanding of who your user is, who's the 360-degree view of the customer. And that's how you develop that personalization and give the customer the feeling that it's their application, the application understands and knows about them. Now, the next aspect going forward is the application wants to feel current and familiar. If anybody has ever used a website, so example is I took a vacation in Bali, and I'm searching for hotels, trying to understand where I want to stay. And I end up picking my hotel, had a wonderful vacation, beautiful beaches. And then for the next 2 or 3 months, every time I visited certain websites, I got advertising for hotels in Bali. I've been there. I'll probably go back, but not for a few years. That idea that the application and the thing gave me and predicted and somehow gave me things that are just not right is not a good thing. So we want to be able to have ways to predict and to go forward in terms of what customers are using. Using my shoe example, that you can see that the person who's shopping is looking for a formal outfit. And you then predict and understand that, well, she enjoys these shoes, maybe she'll enjoy this particular scarf or a pair of gloves, or how to move things together. And of course, you want it to predict the right thing. So if it predicts the wrong thing, like that one, that gives the customer a very bad, very negative user experience. So again, that freshness, that familiarity, that means that we need to use systems that are very much real time to be able to model and to understand and to use machine learning and other algorithms to build up those sets of capabilities. So those predictive models, as you get that full, rich understanding of who the customer is, that gives you good data to feed in the models and to give you an opportunity to provide really good predictive capabilities and to pull things together. Now, the next aspect is if you're a user, one thing you want is your application to actually be there and working when you need it. So the fact that it needs to always be available, And it's also got to be contextualized in terms of where am I, what am I doing. So if I'm in New York City and I hear something about, say, Times Square, I know it's a geographic location. As opposed to if I'm a mathematician at a university and they're talking about times, they might be talking about multiplication or squaring of numbers to get that contextual understanding of where things are going. So it's very important to be able to operationalize it. So what we need to provide for you to back up your application is to be able to have some robust way to manage that information that's coming into your system. The experiences around there, they need to be able to be rich in terms of, am I using a touch interface on a phone or a tablet, or am I using a speech interface, or am I using a textual interface, to be able to have that rich set of capabilities to allow you to customize the application regardless of whether you're talking on a phone, a tablet, a laptop, a PC, or simply a web interface. That customization is super important to give that customer the full experience no matter where they are and how they're doing things. And lastly, as you run your service is likely to be, if it's successful, is to be relatively distributed and global. You may have a strong local presence, but many applications and many companies are trying to build things that are truly global. So we need to have a distributed, well-provided set of interfaces. Then, of course, it has to be able to scale. So if you're on Double 11, you could see with the special sales that they do, your scales can go 10 times, 100 times. You need to have a platform and a set of capabilities that allows you to be able to scale up and to dynamically do it. And you want it to be elastic, because you don't want to be someone who buys a lot of hardware and it sits idle, so having that elasticity. So these are the key things that we need to have inside of an intelligence app. So everything I've just described, I mean, it looks forward-looking, that one, but it's really complex. And I suspect many people in this room are saying, well, how am I going to build this thing? Where do I start? This is a pretty daunting task. And this is something that's very, very difficult to do. So, for example, how do I develop the machine learning? Am I a data scientist? Do I understand the science necessary to build those models? There's some really smart PhDs that spend a lot of time figuring this stuff out. And I'm just a developer. I don't know how to figure this stuff out. How do I get those models? And of course, when you have data models, and even if someone gave you that machine learning model, do I have the data necessary to be able to feed that model, to be able to get good results? Where is that data going to come from? So at Microsoft, we actually sat and looked at this problem and said, well, what can we do here? And one thing that we recognized is that Microsoft has been doing this for many years. It hasn't always been visible to the outside world, but we have systems like Xbox Live, we have systems like Bing, Office 365. These are systems that are built at massive scale. If you looked at Tristan's talk before about how Office, in terms of trillions of email messages per month coming into that system, to be able to build and have an infrastructure to build that is very powerful. So then we try to say, how can we take our experience with these assets and how do we give those to our customers so they can build similar sorts of things on top of our services? And in the context of doing that, that's when we started coming up with the Cortana Intelligence Suite. And this is where the genesis of the ideas that we're trying to do. So we're going to talk further into a little drill down to each of those ones. But we've decided a good way to look at the Cortana Intelligence Suite is to think about it in terms of three different pillars. The first pillar is intelligence. How do we make that application more human? How does it feel human? How does it interact better with a human? And to get that kind of intelligence, cognitive sort of interfaces going there. The second one is how do we create actionable analytics? How do we get some feedback based on what the customer's doing and to be able to predict their new things and to give them the right experiences to let that user get a positive system? Also, if you're running any sort of system that contains inventory, being able to predict what's the inventory model I have, the things that I want to purchase, the things that I want to make sure that I get that. So when someone goes and buys something, it's actually there. There's nothing more frustrating than going to somebody's website and the sale is sold out in 2 minutes and you don't have it. So now you got to wait 2 weeks for the next sale. And to be able to have an inventory model to be able, that prediction is super powerful. But as I mentioned before, you do need to have a rich, trusted data platform so I can operationalize this one. All that data coming in, how do I process it? How do I update in real time those machine learning models that I understand about the customer and pull that thing and feed it all back into the main customer? So what we're going to do is we're going to drill down to each of these different ones and give you some interesting demos and to kind of show you how it actually works and to be able to get a better understanding of how this intelligence suite can add you value. So before I go into the first one of that one, I want to give you a little bit of an overview of what is in the Cortana Intelligence Suite. What we like to think about is we're trying to figure out how to take data, transform it using an intelligence, and turn that intelligence into action. So the first thing we have in there is we have a number of information management things. You look at our data sources. They come in from either traditional relational databases, there's apps feeding data in the system, or we're doing IoT events coming into the Vent Hub. So we have a technology called Azure Data Factory that I'll demonstrate later, which allows you to figure out how to be able to take those pipelines of data, to do processing on it, to transform it, to turn it into meaningful information. We have the Azure Data Catalog, which is a way to help you publish information about your data sources so that other applications and other users can then discover and then to be able to leverage and use those data sources. Then, of course, Event Hub is that way to pull those IoT information in. Now, once you pull it into the system, we have a number of different stores that you can do it. We have the more recent Data Lake store that's being used. We have traditional blob storage, as well as SQL data warehouses to manage that one. Then we pull into the machine learning. We have machine learning to allow you to build those models, to do the predictions, to build the various different flows in there. We also have the new data lake analytics to be able to understand and process big data, as well as running Hadoop, whether it's on classic Pig and Hive or Spark. We have those different capabilities using HD Insight. And then stream analytics for that near real-time flows coming through. How do I process that going forward? As I just mentioned before, some of the intelligence, we now have some new things around these new cognitive services that we'll talk about in another slide. We also have a new bot framework, which many of you may have heard about. We've been experimenting and providing some interesting prototypes and interesting work in the bots, and we're now going to enable you to be able to do that as well. And of course, Cortana, our digital assistant. And lastly, in this whole space, how do I visualize and manage that system? That's where Power BI comes into play. So I want to now hand it over to Ted, who's going to start talking to you a little bit about the intelligence aspect of things.
各位现场所有的贵宾，接下来的主题，同一个主题，我们邀请到的主讲人是微软 Azure Machine Learning Engineering Team 的 Mr. Ted Wei 来为我们主讲，请大家热情掌声欢迎。
Hi, thank you, David. Good morning. My name is Ted Wei. I'm a program manager on Cortana Intelligence.I will be speaking in English for this section, but since I'm from Taiwan, I would like to say a few quick words in Mandarin. 大家好，我是魏文婷，我是从微软总部西雅图来。那有很高兴有机会这次可以回来台湾。五年前我回来台湾的时候，我是来当外交部的替代役，所以那时候回台湾的时候头发剃掉，这次回来很高兴头发不需要剃掉。But I will be speaking more as David talked about.In our intelligence suite, the types of cognitive and perceptual services, APIs, that are available for you today. So, in terms of the cognitive services preview, we have APIs around vision, vision that could help a computer see the world around you and help you understand what the computer sees. In terms of speech capabilities, some of you may be already very familiar with translating whatsomeone says in a written, someone says in their speech, translating that into written text. But what if someone speaks with an accent? What if the sound quality is not good? So our APIs help also to better interpret what the person is trying to say. And also language, how do we process the text? For example, let's say you have a call center and someone calls in and they say their problem. So we can translate what they say into text, and then we can run analysis on that text, whether on their emotions, on their sentiment. We can extract key phrases, and you'll be able to build reports on what people call in, what their problems are, what they're calling about. We also have the knowledge base, where you can, where you have APIs that will help you understand what is the user trying to say. And of course, we have our Bing search engine, which you can take advantage of.We also announced our bot framework preview, and as Tristan also mentioned, today users interface naturally through language. So imagine you're Domino's Pizza, and we have a Domino's Pizza bot. So here we have a user named Jeremy, and he's on Skype, and he says basically, hey, pizza bot, you know, I'm hungry. The pizza bot responds, this is an automated bot. This is not a human. And pizza bot says, hi, how are you? PizzaBot knows who Jeremy is and basically says, do you want your usual pizza? Jeremy says, no thanks, I'd like to try something new. PizzaBot knows what Jeremy is trying to say, gives him some options, and Jeremy picks option 3, and the PizzaBot then delivers that pizza to Jeremy. So these are APIs that you can take advantage of. So if you want to integrate a bot into your service, so a user can talk through Skype, the computer can understand what they want to do and connect with your APIs to take action. So in terms of the bot framework preview, we have our connector service, which allows you to seamlessly connect to text and SMS, Office 365 mail, Twitter, etc. You can register your bot through this. Also have an SDK where you can build your bot so that people talking through Skype or anything else can integrate with your APIs, and also a bot directory, which is coming soon. So I'm going to do a demo now on some of the APIs that are already available. So I will need 3 volunteers, okay? So I need 3 volunteers to come up here. We will use a computer to take a picture of you and to estimate your age and your gender. Okay, so I need 3 people to come up here. You can volunteer the person sitting next to you. It's okay. Okay, we have 1 person. Great. We have 1 more. Good. Can I take 1 more? 1 more in the back? All right, come on. Let's give them a round of applause. Okay, so this is the first time I've met all of you. I've never met you before, right? And I don't know your age, right? Okay, so what I want to show you now is you guys will come over here. Come over here in front of my computer. What we're going to do is to take a picture of our volunteers, and an API will send the picture to this API. API will estimate the gender and the age of these people, and we'll see how good they are. Okay, so come stand over here and stand in front of this camera, all 3 of you. All 3 of you, come stand over here. Stand in front of, yep, okay. 大家都一起站过来。Okay, 所以他会倒数三二一，然后你要看到这个 camera 里面。Okay, 好 ,ready? Okay, okay. 所以我们现在看一下。All right, okay.他预算的准不准？准不准？那请问先生你几岁？你就46岁。OK, all right, so, 那先生请问几岁？
61。
哦，61, OK, 那这个，那先生请问几岁？
我
39。哦，39岁，哦，这个 OK, 这是49岁，还不要动，还不要动。OK, so what I just demoed was an API that you can use today.You send a picture and it sends you these responses back, okay? And so again, these are APIs that we built with lots of information. We'll do this one more time just to, if you want to see if it has better performance. So we'll just wait for this to come down. Okay, you have to wait, so we'll just give it 1 more second. Okay. Okay, so we'll see what it is this time.Okay, so a little bit different, but still kind of okay, right? So you can see it knows that these 3 are 3 males, 3 guys, and it has an estimate of their age, okay? So we can do this. The next thing I want to show is actually emotion detection, okay? 还不要走，还不要走。Okay, 我需要你们要现在要做脸色的表情，要做得很夸张 okay? 所以一个要笑得很开心，然后一个要 okay, 你要笑得很开心。OK, 你不那 OK, 那你可以很 angry 吗？很 angry, OK, OK, 这个是 angry 的人 ，OK, so 他会倒还是一样倒数，倒数完的时候你要很 angry, OK, 这样子很 angry, 你是要笑的吗 ？OK, 你要是很开心 ，Yeah, OK, 好，然后你要很惊讶的感觉，眼睛要张得大大的 ，OK, 很惊讶的 ，OK, 好，所以这一次的话我们会we will do our emotion matching.OK, OK, 好。那你看这次 ,this time, we detected emotion. So you can see on this picture, So this person, I asked him to be very surprised, and you can see that the surprise is very high, and it matches it up with a picture of a baby with the same emotion. Here we have a very happy person. You can see the happiness is very high. Happy baby. This one, you're probably more happy than angry. But you can see here again, we are now able to detect emotion on a face, on an API. Okay, so let's give our three volunteers a round of applause. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, thank you for coming up. So to give you an idea of what's going on in real time, so this is what's happening. You can see right now, it's detecting my face, it's detecting my age, and as you do different expressions, it'll look for it. So I can be very happy. You'll see the happy come up. I can be very angry. And you can see that the anger can be very surprised. And then as you can see it's surprised, be very disgusted, like that, right? So imagine the kinds of possibilities that you can have with APIs like this. So if you're working at a retail store, the people who walk into your store, you now know how many men, how many women, how old they are. How are they happy? Are they mad in your store? All these things are things that you can do that's available today. And so let me show you. These are the APIs. So these are the Microsoft Cognitive Services APIs. So here, the first one is computer vision. So in computer vision, I'll give you a quick idea of how you can integrate with these APIs. So here, let's say we're sending up a picture, and you can see the response. It says, and it actually also tells you what's in it. So we see the identification of the face, we see the age, we see the gender, but also we see there's water, there's sport, there's swimming. Well, let's try to send another picture. In this picture, you can see that there's a platform, a station, subway. And so these are, again, the APIs that are already available. So not only for objects inside an image, but as I showed you, the emotion. Also for speaker recognition. Imagine you're building an app so that you want to recognize who's speaking, whether it's the father, the mother, the daughter. You can then change the behavior of your app based on who's using it. You can change the behavior of your app based on how happy or how angry that person is. Or if you're trying to interface, how you can use the person's emotion and be able to adjust your app to better suit your user. And again, these are APIs that are available to you today. You can build the app that I just showed you. You can build that in a few days because these APIs are available. So the next thing I want to show you is, besides the APIs that are really, already available, going into actionable analytics and machine learning. And so in your organization, in your company, maybe you have questions. You get asked questions all the time. And how would you build a machine learning model to be able to answer that question? So the example question we will ask today is, would you board the Titanic? So imagine there's a ship called the Titanic, and you have a ticket. Would you get on the Titanic? How would you answer that question with data? So we're going to do a demo on machine learning. So this is the machine learning interface, and we also have the Cortana Intelligence Gallery. So just like in a Microsoft document, when you open up a new document, there's lots of different templates. So there's also lots of different templates here, too. And so in this case, you can do things like fraud detection, or you can predict the wine quality. Lots of machine learning models already available to you. And so in this case, I'm going to open up one that will predict whether someone will survive the Titanic or not. And we can open it in the studio. This is the machine learning studio. And you can see here everything is drag and drop. So if you're a developer, if you're not a data scientist, or you're an aspiring data scientist, you can easily use a tool like this to build a machine learning model. So I'm going to just show you really quickly. We'll have an in-depth session on using Azure Machine Learning later on in this week, actually this afternoon and tomorrow. So I will go through this rather quickly. But you can see that we have our data from Titanic, from people on the Titanic. And then you will see that these are just different characteristics of the people, whether they survived or not, whether they were first class, second class, or third class passengers. And then we do some data cleansing, and we split the data here. So for those of you familiar with machine learning, we separate into training and test data. We build a model on our training data, and we'll test it on our test data. In this case, we're using a two-class boosted decision tree. But if you want to use R or Python, you can also use R and Python code. And so I've already trained this model, and then you can look at the results of it on my test data. So here we have an ROC curve, and it tells you how accurate this is. So I'll be speaking on a session this afternoon about basic data science, but let's say you're happy with this model, and you want to now operationalize it. So we'll create a predictive web service. What we're doing now is we're taking this model and we're going to put an API and host it on Azure so that you can build an app and use this API. So now I'm turning this model, and it's just going to take take about a minute to run. So while that's running, I'm just going to wait for it to be able to do this. And we call this an experiment because then you can try lots of different algorithms. Pretend you don't like boosted decision trees. Maybe you want to use a neural network. Maybe you want to use a support vector machine. You can try different types of algorithms to see how good of performance that you'll get. So now this is running. All I do is I click deploy a web service. And what this is doing now is I'm actually changing and turning this model into an API on Azure. So you don't have to worry about anything. And now you have this API. Now you can build an app. You can build an app and call this API. You can see here, in this case, you have your RESTful API. This is your URL. And you have an API key. So let me demo how you would be able to use that. So as Tristan mentioned earlier, we've also integrated with Azure Machine Learning using an Excel add-in. And so in this case, let's talk about two passengers on the Titanic. We have Leonardo DiCaprio. He was a third-class passenger, male, about 28, did not travel with any siblings. And then he paid about he gambled and his ticket was free, but let's say his third-class ticket was $7. Kate Winslet was a first-class female. She was maybe 23 years old. She traveled with her two parents, and her fare price was about $71. So let's send this data to our Azure Machine Learning model API and get a prediction back to see whether they would survive or not. So I'm calling the API with this data, and I get a response. And I see that Leonardo DiCaprio did not survive, but Kate Winslet did. So if you saw the movie, this is a good model, right? This is a very accurate model. And so again, this is just to demonstrate integration with an Azure Machine Learning model in an API. Whether you're in sales, whether you want to put your data in Excel and do predictions on sales forecasting, whether you want to build an app and send data and get it back, this is how you can build a machine learning model and put it into production. And so with that, I'd like to turn this back over to David. He'll finish up and talk about the trusted data platform. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ray. Once again, please welcome Mr. Robinson.
Okay, so talk a little bit more about the trusted data platform. Ted did a great job outlining the APIs and the machine learning technology you have. But it's one thing to build models. It's another thing to actually be able to run it at scale and to be able to operationalize it. So it's going beyond just being a data scientist, but how do I build an actual system to make this work going forward? So within the Cortana suite here, I mentioned this before, these are the major different capabilities and things that we have within that. So to look at the kind of architecture that we're using and we're encouraging people to use is what's called a common Lambda architecture. So So at the top there, you have the speed one. So this is where real-time data, things are coming in and getting processed right away. I'm not going to go down into the details of all the different aspects of this one, but essentially you stream the data in, do some, you know, run some machine learning models on it to understand what's happening using the APIs that Ted was discussing about, and that's the way you get that speed one. And below the line is what we call the batch one. This is where we take the full rich set of the data, and we're able to do batch processing on it to use that to be able to further refine and train and to look at our models and to get better understanding of where the data is. So that batch layer is important to be able to get that full rich, often on an hourly or potentially a daily cycle to be able to get data going forward. So we're pushing and encouraging people to develop towards these Lambda architectures and building out various technologies such as Hadoop or ML or SQL Data Warehouse to be able to increase and to be able to work with those sorts of things. So let me also take a little bit of a demo here, switch over to my screen, and show you some of the things that we're doing from a technology perspective. We have, which has been in almost a year now, Azure Data Factory. And Azure Data Factory, let me switch to the main page here. In Azure Data Factory, we have this capability of, gives you a way to various operationalize, manage, and monitor, and understand pipelines and various different data flows you're doing within your system. So in order to make it kind of understand what's happening, I'm going to click here on the manage and monitor to kind of show you an example application or a pipeline that's getting done. So this is a sample that we've got. It's actually available on the web. If you go into ADF, it'll be able to show you and pull this one up. So this one is about customer profiling. This application is talking about having a application that is a gaming application. And in the gaming application, they did some new marketing initiatives. They did some things to push the game, to actually do some in-purchase apps, and to see how the customers are going to respond. So what ends up happening is you have a first pipeline, and this is a pipeline where the data is coming in from the application. It contains all the various information about what's happening in the games themselves. It gets loaded into Blob Store, rich set of data. The first thing we want to do is we want to be able to partition this data, typically by year, month, day, to understand how things are getting done. And that's that first section right here that we're seeing in the pipeline itself. Then once that pipeline has been processed and we get a set partitioning, we also want to understand a little bit more about the user. So the simple example is we want to add geocode data. So we want to understand, is there regional differences? Are people in Taiwan playing the game different than the people in Japan? And how are they acting and interacting with the system? So we then add this reference geocode data, which then again gets stored in a blob store. And the last part of the pipeline here is to be able to actually do a set of analytics on it to understand how this thing is getting processed and did the campaign actually work as planned. Now, to take a quick little example here, I'm going to open up this middle pipeline, which is the geocode reference pipeline, and kind of show you a little bit about what it is. So first off, you can see here that here's the profile partition data that we have, and here's the geocode reference set. And it's getting pulled together into a pig script to be able to pull together the various different aspects and output it. Now, if you look down here, you can see a couple things have failed. So if we go through and click on the particular one, we can see that this pipeline is running at a regular activity, and on Friday the 1st, it had a failure. So we'll give a click on that one, and we'll see what has actually happened within the system. So now you can see here in my Explorer window here, you can see that here it failed on the 1st. You can see there's a status failure. I have links to all the various different logs of information that I have available. And we can see down here there's a little thing that says a pig script failed with error code 2, a little bit of details on it. This now allows you to understand what happened in that particular slice. Now that we have all this data there, we discovered, maybe we have an error in the script. We can flip over here and we can look at the script. Oops, I didn't quite get it there. You can go through and edit the script and within the single pane pull it together. Then the last thing you can do is that in this particular button here is you can go back and say, after I fix my problem, maybe there's an error in the data type or something like that one, I can go back and rerun that activity, get a whole new set of activities going forward. So this is a different way to show how Azure Data Factory allows you to do that operationalization and movement of that data. And you can create some very rich, very elaborate different sets of pipelines and different things that we've done. Now let me move back to another aspect of Azure Data Factory that I'm personally proud of because my team in Shanghai is the primary contributor to it. In order to be able to analyze and manage data within Azure and in other big data scenarios, you have to get the data into the system. So if anybody here has ever gone through the process of trying to load data into Azure or any sort of cloud service, they discovered it's actually usually a fairly complex, especially as the data sets get larger. How do you do it in an efficient way? Networks go down, there's different transient sorts of issues, and how to do it in a reliable way. So what we've done is we've actually put into preview now, it's been in preview for about a month now, a thing we're calling the copy data wizard. So when you click on this one, it pulls up this interesting little dialogue here, which allows you to pull together the various different aspects of that data. It starts out with a simple little task name. We give you a name by default. It's not necessarily important what you pick as the name. And it gives you an option to do the copy as a single task or run it regularly on a schedule. If it's on a schedule, you can specify what's the recurrence, what's the start time on, the frequency of operations. But for our demo purposes, we're just going to do it once. So we're going to select one time. Select next. Within the data movement capability, the copy wizard, we have a large, rich set of data sources that we can pull data from. Within the overall system, we have over 20 right now. Right now, the wizard is only exposing roughly 12. So we have simple things like Azure Blob Store, on-premises SQL Server, MySQL, Oracle, Teradata are all supported right now. As we move forward towards the end of this calendar year, we're trying to increase this number to over 50 different data sources there. So I'm going to just do a quick little, we're low on time, so I'm going to go the simple case. You have two different ways. We can create a data store or use an existing data store. So in this case, I'm just going to pick up an existing data store. So I know that I have a SQL Server that I have. This is running back in Shanghai underneath the desk of my colleague's office. So I'm going to pick on SQL Server. The SQL Server on-prem is an interesting, unique capability because we have a thing called a data management gateway. That data management gateway is a small agent that you load up onto your local system. And it provides a transparent tunnel through any sort of corporate firewalls to be able to give you a trusted way to access your data and to be able to do that. So all the things that you're seeing here are actually going to Shanghai into the Microsoft office underneath my colleague's desk. So I'll click on SQL Server here. The first thing it's going to do is going to interrogate and go to the server and say, what tables exist? Now, this particular database, for demo purposes, is just a classic Northwind database that anybody's done it. And you can see the number of different tables that are existing. So I'm going to pick a simple one. I'm going to say, I want to look at my customers. I want to load my customer table into the cloud. So what it's going to first do is you can see it's going to load to preview so I can make sure that what I see is the data that I want. Because there's nothing worse than going through and seeing a list of names, especially as they get collected, and you don't know what it is. So this little preview here shows me roughly the top 10 rows or so within the database. So I can say, yep, this looks like my customer database. But I want to also make sure that it's the right typing, is the schema. So now I can flip over to the schema page and see, oh, yep, they're all customer strings, the names, various different aspects. So I can understand that I'm getting the right data. So this is the table that I want to upload. So now I need to pick somewhere to put it. Well, in Azure and a lot of the various different services we have, Blob Store is kind of the canonical way of putting things and storing it. But if I wanted to, I could put it into a SQL Azure database, I could put it in Azure DW, I could actually even move it to another on-prem SQL Server if I actually wanted to do it. So in this case, I'm going to pick Blob Store, and I'm going to go pick one that I already have configured. Now this puts up together a very simple browsing experience. So now I'm going to go through my particular storage account and figure out where I want to browse it. So I'm going to pull down here. I know I have a demo container because I set it up for this demo. Oops, I made a mistake here. So I got a demo container. Double click on it. Then up comes, here's the customers. Click on it. I choose it. So there I have my demo container, the file name of that one. Now, the next step I can do is I want to be able to, I actually have a capability to adjust and manipulate the different file formats. So the output in this particular case, actually it's a text format, comma separated, that's exactly what I want. But we also have a set of advanced different things we can do. Certain different capabilities where you may want to change what the delimiters, what the quote characters are, or a more interesting one is if I'm doing a very large data set, I now have an option to be able to pick different kinds of compression. I can decompress it with BZIP2, deflate, GZIP, different techniques. In this case, it's actually a small database, so I won't bother with compression. So, and this is a summary page. So just those quick, simple steps is all I needed to do to set up that copy. And I could, whether I did it one time or multiple times, and all I need to do now is just click finish, and you'll see that it's going to start deploying that copy and then execute that copy from on-premises to the cloud. I can go back to the monitoring app. Once it gets deployed, I can go and see how it's done. If I'm transferring, say, terabytes of data, I can go see how it's executing. Is it being successful? Are there any errors that may have occurred? Sometimes we have cases where someone will do the advanced options and they will want to manipulate a particular row or table, and sometimes the type won't match, and you'll be able to see that information and go forward from there. So that's the data movement capability. So from a this is a simple, easy way to be able to upload and to move data into the system. So now let me switch back to the presentation. Let's talk a little bit about where we're going with the Cortana Intelligence Suite. So right now we're in the first half of this calendar year, 2016, and you see that we're focusing on solutions right now around lead generation and opportunity scoring. So these are some of the initial solutions that we're deploying out. And then through the second half of the year, based on the feedback, we're going to then continue to deploy and develop a set of solutions to make it very easy for customers to just pick things up and go forward. Examples are the various different solutions that Ted was showing you earlier. And again, we've now got the cognitive services is now in preview. We're clearly going to move those towards general availability as long as the bot framework as well. We're going to add additional APIs to kind of continue to round out that various different capabilities. The machine learning and analytics, again, as we mentioned before, we've got a lot of different things that are positive in that one. We're now introducing encryption, so we have better compliance for people who are trying to manage and manipulate their data. They want to make sure it's, even though it's in the cloud, they want to make sure it's secure going forward. We're also looking to try to make the machine learning algorithms be much better at high-dimensional data as well as large quantities of data so that you can then do better processing on that one. Our server is now beginning available now for Spark support, and then we're going to move forward in the second half of the year to get better services within Azure Data Lakes, both analytics as well as the store itself. And of course, as I mentioned before, the Azure Data Catalog is a capability that we just put out to GA just a couple weeks ago. I'll show you a quick little brief highlights of the capabilities of it. Azure Data Catalog is very exciting because it allows a new way to neighborize enterprise-wide self-service of data. And it's important as this isn't just about on-premises or cloud. It's allowing an enterprise to be able to collect in a single place all of the various different pieces that they want to understand that metadata. Once that metadata is in there, when they're able to register it, they can actually enrich it. And one of the neat capabilities that I really like about Azure Data Catalog is if you go through and you do any sort of search capabilities, that you get this ton of information back. How do I know it's the right data? So for example, if you go to a retail site, in the US, for example, is Amazon, you get to see what different reviews have. So the Azure Data Catalog allows customers to annotate and say, well, this is really good data for using for this particular capability or other annotations on it. And it's a crowdsourcing sort of thing. It's not about having any single person doing it, but as people use the service and explore these data sources, then they're able to be able to write annotations and to allow their colleagues or other people doing it. So this is a really interesting capability going forward. So lastly, I want to leave you a couple links of things you can look at. Here's the email address for both myself and Ted. Again, feel free to send us any questions, comments. We can get you, redirect you to the various different people who may be able to get you the expertise if we can't answer ourselves. There's a number of different sites available. The CortanaIntelligence.com is a new site that talks all about the capabilities of that one. There's a gallery of different capabilities as well as the cognitive API set within that one. So. That's our demos and our talks. I hope it was informative for everybody. Thank you very much.